You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on the brand new podcast app, Himalaya. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with David Ramil, and today we are opening up the mailbag. We've got questions about DeMarcus Cousins, the cost of trading Hassan Whiteside, and more. But let's start with this question from David Bergsteinman, who writes in, I know our roster may be different at the start of the season, but how do you think the current roster fits with Jimmy Butler? I think a lineup of Justice, Butler, DJJ, Bam would be a fun team to watch on defense and on the break. Hopefully, Derek Jones Jr. and Bam can make strides in their three-point shooting. Bam's shot looked so pure in the recent Miami Pro-Am game where he hit three threes. I'm pretty sure he would hit at a higher percentage than James Johnson. All our role players should play better with Butler. David, what do you think?
I'm not convinced about Bam. Like, I think we saw this last year also. We saw this last year when he was going up against James Harden in those practices at the American Airlines Arena. We saw it at the Pro-Am games. I mean, like, I think even in summer league, we saw a little bit of Bam being able to shoot the ball. And I just, he's still hesitant to do it. Like, I'm not sure what it is. I'm not sure if, again, we've talked about this before. The team hasn't given him any indication that he shouldn't shoot, and yet he just doesn't seem comfortable with his shot. So as much as we like to see that improvement, and I think there is improvement, I think it's a fluid shot, to be honest with you. I think it's been fluid. He lacks the confidence. And I don't know that we're going to see any kind of significant uptick in that shooting. I'd like to see that. Given that, I don't know also if that lineup that David Bergsteinman presents is the best. So, like, I feel like there's a lack of shooting there.
Can we talk a little bit more about Bam? Because I agree with you.
Yes,
I think
please.
He's not. I don't think he's comfortable with it. I don't think that this is a situation where Eric Spoelstra has told him not to.
Right.
And I do think that that was the case with Hassan Whiteside. And Whiteside, let's face it, didn't earn the right to shoot those things. And
right.
The way that Bam Adebayo plays, the way that Whiteside played, two very different styles, despite the fact that they both play the same position. Bam is very comfortable away from the basket, facilitating, setting good screens. He could pick and pop out of those once he does eventually get more comfortable if that happens. But he's also really good at facilitating with dribble handoffs, coming out of the high post and doing those sort of things. Whiteside wasn't great at that. And I think that Bam's ability to just be comfortable further away from the basket will just open things up at some point once he's comfortable with that shot. Now, he's taken 22 threes in his entire career, two-year career. He's only taken 22. He's made three of them. So he's not comfortable with the shot. He's a good free throw shooter for his position. He shoots 73% last year. I do think that the stroke is there, like you said. And he's been, based on Instagram sleuthing, he has been working on it, and he's been working on it with Chris Bosh this summer. I hope he's working on it with the intention of getting more comfortable with it and actually doing it in games. I'd like to see him shoot a three a game to start, and then maybe you expand that. Maybe you turn into a Brook Lopez or, you know, a Kelly Olynyk type of frequency from 3-point range. For now, let's get it going. Let's get the wheels on the track and get it going, because I think it would be really valuable.
How would you see that playing out as far as, like, working together with Jimmy? Like, is this like a pick-and-pop situation where Jimmy's the ball handler?
I think so.
And Bam kind of cuts out to the three-point line and knocks it down. Yeah,
similar to what he did with Joel Embiid, right?
Yeah. I don't think that Bam's there. I think he'd prefer probably running to the rim, you know.
Yes, I agree. And that's the thing. Once Bam gets good at the three-point shot, he's going to be a really dangerous offensive weapon. I mean, we know how good he is defensively.
Yeah.
But once he gets the three, all he has to do is just either pop or roll out of those pick-and-roll situations with Jimmy Butler or Justice Winslow or whoever, and he is such a crazy lob threat that you have to respect it. So you can't just play on him because he's going to blow right by you and then jump over you, and then you can't play off of him if and when he develops that three-point shot. I mean, this is a guy, I know we like to talk about his ball handling and maybe he's able to be this sort of Pascal Siakam type of guy where now he's facilitating and point Bam and all this stuff. Put that on hold. Once he gets a three-point shot going, everything opens up for him.
So let's tweak David's proposed lineup a little bit, because I don't think that that's going to work. Derek Jones Jr., I'm still not convinced. Like, we've been hearing that the stroke is something that he's continuing to work on. You talked to him last year at Summer League before his injury, and he had shown promise, but then we saw the regular season didn't quite pan out the way we thought it would be. I still think that James Johnson is likely to start. And now I'm kind of thinking about it. How often was he a screener in pick and roll situations? Not often. It always seemed like he had the ball in his hands in pick and roll situations.
Who did?
James Johnson.
Oh, James Johnson. Yeah, he wasn't as like last year, because he used to screen a lot more. Last year, I don't know if it was because they didn't want people bumping into his body, given that he was recovering, you know, from that abdominal surgery, which would make a ton of sense if that were the case. Like,
that's good.
That would play that, you know, that checks out. But I actually think Kelly Olynyk ends up starting next to Bam.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, and with Jimmy, I mean, that's...
But this is a four-person lineup that I said. So Justice, Jimmy, Derek Jones Jr., and Bam, you could just plug in James Johnson or Kelly Olynyk, I guess, and play a really super big lineup, or plug in another guard in that lineup too, because Justice and Butler could both handle the ball like guards, right? So you're not worried necessarily about having a guard on the roster or in that unit, but I still think that's where they end up, just because they have so many who could play and can space the floor for them. Ultimately, Derek Jones Jr., the problem is that he doesn't really do anything. He doesn't really set screens. He doesn't really create with the ball in his hands. He's a guy who just sort of stands in the corner, either waits to catch and shoot or runs for an offensive rebound and a putback. And he's very valuable in that respect, and he could defend his butt off, but he's not necessarily a guy who's creating offense. And you might want to be spacing the floor around Jimmy Butler and Justice Winslow.
So given that, then, I mean, I know we've talked about it, and obviously the roster is still very much up in the air. Goran Dragic could be traded. Kelly Olynyk could be traded. We don't know what's going to happen. I mean, so... what's the best starting lineup then? Knowing if the roster stays the way it currently is it Goran in the starting lineup? Is it Tyler Hero in the starting lineup? And then kind of, you know, sending Jimmy up to the three spot there. I'm not sure I see it. I don't know if that works necessarily. And I don't know if you want to start Tyler right away either. I think he's not quite ready for that. Is Deion the best option?
Deion might be the best option. He can switch defensively. He's a good three-point shooter. The problem with Deion is now you've got three guys who need the ball.
Unless and you can convince, like driving to the rim.
And driving to the rim. But unless you can convince Deion to not have the ball and just like, look, we're going to get you really good looks from three-point range. You're going to score a lot of points, and you're going to be able to attack those closeouts. But Deion's so good attacking with the ball as a primary ball handler. He's so good at that. I ultimately think maybe Dragic in the starting lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Veteran,
if he's on the roster,
can shoot the ball and space the floor from 3-point range, and he's getting up there in age. Maybe it's better to just have him attack closeouts.
Is he the best catch and shoot guy on the roster?
I think Deion is,
or is it Kelly? Maybe Kelly.
I think
Kelly's problem.
Kelly or Deion?
Yeah,
Dragic. There, like those three, I would say are up there, right? It's probably, you know, any one of those three, and then Tyler Hero he was just telling us at Summer League that he's working on his catch and shoot, but he makes sense if you want to put him in there. Because he doesn't necessarily need the ball in his hands, because he could space the floor and he can try really hard. And, you know, you bracket him with some veterans who really know how to do stuff. It could help his development. But if Dragic is on the roster, I think he starts. And then you bring Deion as your creator off the bench and then have Tyler Hero play off of him. Which isn't terrible. It's not terrible. I don't know. But this whole thing can change. Billy writes in, we got Jimmy, but at what cost? He's a year older. The Heat can't make a deep run on just him, and we lost Josh Richardson. Pat needs to bring in Kevin Love or Bradley Beal now to pair with Butler and Winslow, right? Charles writes in, let's go. Who else do you see that the Miami Heat can pick up to help this team out and get Jimmy Butler some help? Who can help Jimmy Butler right now, David? Kevin Love, that's the name, right?
That is the perfect one. I mean, we were just talking about who the best starter there, somebody who can space the floor at the forwards position. And I mean, Love is a great rebounder. You know, has problems defensively, but you can hide his defense if you have other players that are versatile and can switch the way Jimmy, Justice, and Bam can. Yeah. So, I mean, he's a perfect complement. He really is. And I know we're talking about this. I know people also knock the contract, which is not as bad. Like, I really think for a guy that is as capable and productive as Kevin Love is, and I know the other concern is his injuries, I think those are overstated. I really think that Kevin Love is a really good fit. He's smart, championship experience, playoff experience. He understands how to make adjustments. He's great in a complementary role. Yes, like, he understands that now, having played alongside LeBron James. He's not going to be like, oh, okay, I'm going to try to take the ball away from Jimmy. No, no, none of that concern. No head cases, nothing like that. I think he'd be very, very, very comfortable in Miami. And I just also don't see how that's going to work out, given what Miami currently has in terms of assets. I don't know. I don't think the Cavaliers would want a Goran Dragic or even a Ryan Anderson or a James Johnson. So
salary relief, maybe Myers Leonard and Dragic, or I don't know. It would have to be salary relief because they don't have any picks. They can't move any other things. Yeah. Maybe it's a three-way trade. I don't know. All I know is that if you're Pat Riley, you better be calling about Kevin Love, because I agree with you 100%. He's a perfect fit, and you hit the nail on the head when you said that he's comfortable in that complimentary role. Bradley Beal obviously is the better player, and I'm not saying you don't get Bradley Beal because he hasn't necessarily had to play that complimentary role the last couple of years, but it's going to be a lot harder to get Bradley Beal than it would.
Yeah, you don't have to go after him now. You can go after him in free agency in a couple of years when you've got Love and Butler already on the roster.
Let's take a break here. Coming up, can DeMarcus Cousins and Bam Adebayo play together? You're listening to Locked On Heat. For the latest takes on NBA free agency, follow all the Locked On Podcast Network hosts on one Twitter feed, and that's at Locked On NBA Net. It's an awesome way to get all the latest opinions from the local experts during NBA free agency. Follow along on Twitter at Locked On NBA Net. Adam Cashmanstein writes in, "Hello, LOH. You guys said that you wouldn't start DeMarcus Cousins if we got him. But if he works his way up as a starter, how do you think he and Bam complement each other?"
Well, I mean, that's the big question, right? Is how is he going to work his way as a starter? Like, you know, is he going to be perfectly healthy? Is he not enough of a problem defensively where you could say you could start him as a big alongside Bam Adebayo? I just don't see it. Like, I think, you know, it's problematic. I like the idea of Cousins in Miami. I like his skill set, obviously. He's a good passer. He's a good playmaker. He's a great shooter, et cetera. But at the same time, I don't know if he's going to be able to work his way back. And I think that's a big question. So you give him what minutes you can as a bench player. You see him kind of earn those a little bit. Eventually, maybe he could be promoted to a starting position. But, I mean, is he a better option? Is he a better complement to Bam than Kelly Olynyk or anybody else or James Johnson? And I think that's the question here. So as far as his ability to complement Bam, I mean, I think he'd be the best backup center on the roster. You know, I think you put Olynyk at the four. Myers Leonard just doesn't play, as we talked before. So, I mean, Boogie is probably a great backup center at this point in his career.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to have to really get in shape. And look, I do think what we just talked about with Kevin Love, if you want production out of that power forward spot or out of that other front court position, if you want production out of it, DeMarcus Cousins makes a whole lot of sense. And at first I was and I really like DeMarcus Cousins. I was anti-DeMarcus Cousins in Miami, and the more I thought about it, the more I'm just, you know what? Let's do it. Let's just do it. You know? Because if he's going to get in shape anywhere, it would be Miami. And I do think that if he came into Miami as he is now, he's too heavy set, he's too injured, and there's issues defensively that are really, really hard to cover up that the Warriors had a hard time covering up in the playoffs, and that would be problematic. But if he could drop 20 pounds, right, lower that body fat, really get onto the regiment. Now, you could, you know, you take your weight down, that's less load on your knees and your ankles with the things that have been giving him a hard time, his lower body. So I think Nat, he should be looking to lose weight, you know? And if he could do that, now all of a sudden you're maybe lean, it might be too generous, but you're a leaner, you're 6'11", you don't need to be amazing defensively, but you just need to be a little bit more mobile than you were before, and if you lose that weight, you will be. And if you can get in shape maybe by halfway through the season, a few months into the season, then you work your way into that starting lineup, and now we're talking about somebody who is really similar to Kevin Love. If he gets into shape, the way that Deion and James Johnson got into shape, if he gets into shape like that, we're looking at somebody who can, like Kevin Love, shoot the three. Like Kevin Love, is an elite passer. He's a better passer than Kevin Love is in the half court.
Yes.
He's mobile enough to attack closeouts, but you don't need him to do it. And of course, he could post up and facilitate from there, like Kevin Love. And again, you just hope that defensively he comes along and that shedding weight would help him on that end. But if we're talking about a guy like Kevin Love being a perfect fit for Miami, if you can't get Kevin Love, just like we talked about, You can get DeMarcus Cousins. And I've already said this on the podcast. There is significant interest from DeMarcus Cousins in signing with Miami. Does Miami want to do it? Now, right now, as currently constructed, they have 16 guys under contract. That includes Udonis Haslam. We don't know his decision. That includes Ryan Anderson, who is yet to be waived. We don't know what he, we know that he's going to get waived, but we don't know what that looks like, whether they just waive him outright or they stretches that salary cap hit over the next 3 years. Of course, there's the whole Goran Dragic thing. I'm assuming somebody needs to get traded in order to make this hard cap thing work, and then they'll just waive Ryan Anderson outright. So a 1 to 2 roster spots could end up opening up, depending on what happens with everything. I think DeMarcus Cousins ought to be one of those spots. I really do.
I agree. I mean, you're probably giving... unless it depends on what the package would be in exchange for Kevin Love. I think Love is probably, arguably, the better player.
Yes, absolutely.
So, but if you can make an addition now, if you can't make that trade for Love and you can make a very easy, quick, cheap decision and to addition and DeMarcus, absolutely bring him in. Like, I mean, there's no cost to Miami. He's not, like, you saw him, you covered the Warriors up close. Was he really a disruptive presence? There was so much going on there.
Not at all.
So much drama, so much scrutiny. Right. He's not.
I would say he was probably one of the best guys in that locker room last year. And
so, I mean, the DeMarcus from Sacramento is a different version of DeMarcus now, I think. Like, when he was being asked to carry a team that was in constant flux, with terrible coaching changes constantly, and a bad roster built around him.
Boogie's thing is that he's impatient. He's not a bad guy. He's impatient.
Yeah. And he's loud, too.
And we see that on the court. We see that manifest in all of the technicals he gets. That doesn't make him a bad teammate. It just means he's impatient, and he's very quick to blow a gasket. That's all. That's all it is. And
demonstrative, yeah, also.
Yes, very emotional. Like, when how he feels. You know, like, as soon as you walk into the scrum, you're like, okay. Before he even says anything, you're like, all right. But in Sacramento, that impatience turned into him people walking on eggshells around him because he was impatient with the crap that was around him. And nobody could blame him for that. And he wasn't the locker room leader. He wasn't the guy that elevated that franchise. But how many guys are that? And so when he was in New Orleans, we heard nothing but rave reviews. When he was in Golden State, I saw it up close and in person. He was a great teammate. I said it. One of the best guys in that locker room. He was he was not volatile at all. If you're doing the right things, you're not testing that impatience. And the Heat have that culture in place. They'll get him into shape. And look, if you're the Heat and you sign him to maybe a team option in the second year, you know, a 1-1 kind of thing.
Yeah.
You could turn him into an asset. If you get him into shape, you can really turn him into an asset. Now, I don't think he signs a 1-1 with a team option. I think he's going to take another minimum deal or something close to it and just try and bet on himself again. But who knows? Who knows? Billy writes in, We have Whiteside, and all I hear is how bad a contract and a player he is. He's going to Portland, and now he's some big asset who the Heat will miss. NBA TV analysts don't really know him or just don't like the Heat. David, I would even go further. I don't think that they really watched the Heat last year.
That's a good point.
And I think you look at a lot of analysts are lazy when it comes to these teams who didn't really matter the last couple of years. They look at the production. They look at the box scores, and they go from there. That's it. That's the research.
I think you can also see it in the way Josh Richardson is being valued now that he's in Philadelphia. Like, and I know a lot of that has to do with the fact that he's going to be taking on a lesser role, but now all of a sudden, a player that was part of a very mediocre collection of talent and middling talent, etc., as far as how Miami was viewed last year, now all of a sudden he goes to Philadelphia, and by and large, we're hearing nothing but rave reviews about a fantastic player on a great contract. Where was all this praise last year? And conversely, now we're seeing it with Hassan Whiteside, too. A guy who was coming off the bench in Miami, who was problematic as far as his public displays of emotion to the media and complaining about playing time and things of this sort, couldn't earn a starting spot over Bam Adebayo. And now all of a sudden he's going to go in there and carry Portland to a championship contention. It's like, that's so ludicrous. I don't think there's any kind of hatred towards Miami or dislike towards Miami. I really don't think that's the case. I think it's like you said, it's mostly lazy analysis. Yeah. You don't watch a team because, well, they're probably not going to be a good playoff team. There's no exciting player there for you to watch.
And that's the key. It's the playoff thing.
Right.
It's the playoff thing. And Josh Richardson going to a playoff team is exciting. And he is a great fit. And look, he's going to play shooting guard, which he should have been playing for the last 2 years. It's a great fit. I have no problem with the Josh Richardson stuff. I actually thought a lot of people who paid attention knew that Josh Richardson was a really good player, sort of playing out of position and being asked to do too much. And I think that people are just happy to see him in the right position now. And I am too. With Whiteside, I also think part of it is NBA TV likes to hire a lot of former players, and the former players that they hire are old, and the former players that they hired played at a time where guys like Hassan Whiteside were really valuable.
Yeah, archaic bigs.
Yes, and so and this is, you know, and that's it. And so their lens, you know, they're viewing it through that lens, and that's why they probably were just like a lot of our mailbag listeners who were like, why don't they post up Whiteside more? They probably were, hey, if the Heat would have played, if posted up Whiteside more, they'd probably be in the playoffs, which is completely false and not true. But I bet a lot of people on TV think that. Let's take a break, but coming up, were the Heat too impatient in trading for Jimmy Butler? You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Taylor writes in, is Mo Harkless a negative asset? Why was the first round pick attached to him? I could understand Leonard, but Mo is a solid wing player, right? What do you think, David?
Yeah, he's a solid wing player. I think he actually would have been a nice fit in Miami. Mm-hmm. Not sure if he would have started or been a backup, but I think he would have been able to contribute in some way. I think the reasoning was, well, you had to move Hassan Whiteside. That's basically it. I think you were looking to make a deal, and in order to move Hassan Whiteside, and in order to free up the salary cap space to acquire Jimmy Butler, you had to package Harkless somehow, and I think the only way that you could entice the Clippers in order to do so is to attach that first-round pick.
And the Clippers had leverage, right? They knew the Heat needed to clear that cap space. They knew that this whole Jimmy Butler three-way sign-and-trade thing fell apart, and that the Heat needed to get it done, and so the Clippers had leverage. It's not negative asset, neutral asset, positive. The Clippers had leverage. That's it. That's all it is. Right. And then Mo Harkless on $10 million is a little much, and you're asking the Clippers to eat into their cap space, which they really valued this year. And so
that's a good point.
That's important.
Moreover, this is all Dallas's fault anyway for reneging on their deal.
That's right. J.A. writes in, fans are often split between not wanting to trade for a B-level star, and yet I bet you by 2020, 2021, we'll be so desperate that we'll cheer a B-star signing. What do you see as the differences between a B-star trade now and a B-star signing in 2020, 2021? Well, I think the difference is that one is now and one is a year from now.
What's a B-star? What qualifies as a B-star?
I guess Jimmy is a B-level star, just like the guy who isn't going to lead you to a championship.
Well, okay. I mean,
I think that's what he means right now. Like Durant, LeBron, Giannis, James Harden, those are A-level stars. Steph, you know, best player on a title team. Anything below that, I guess, is B-level.
Kawhi. Six guys in the league that are potential MVP candidates.
I think that's fair. Yeah, I think those are your A-level stars. Either way, whatever Jimmy Butler is, what's the difference between signing him now or trading for him now versus signing him in 2020? Do you think that the Heat maybe should have waited on this?
No, absolutely not. Yeah. Because I think, we talked about this a million times, and it bears repeating. Like, the acquisition of Jimmy Butler is necessary to get that foot in the door. Now that paves the way for other moves. And now I think, to his question, you know, the trade now could be to acquire Kevin Love. The 2021 signing could be a Bradley Beal or something like that. You know what I'm saying? That's been the difference. And then you'd have to move potential assets that would be there, players that might be able to contribute on that roster. And so you don't necessarily have to move those players. You kind of hope that some of these older contracts kind of expire, and then you can sign a bigger player. But, you know, I think that's the difference right there.
And I think there's a difference in B-level stars, too. I would rather have Jimmy Butler than DeMar DeRozan. 100 times out of 100, right? Yeah, and that's 2020, 2021.
Yeah, C minus. I think it might be a C plus, B minus.
Yeah, DeMar DeRozan is like a C minus level star. But that's the guy next year. 2020, 2021, that's the guy. Now, in the summer of 2021, now it's a really loaded free agency class. But like you just said, now you have the guy to build around. Miami is now relevant. And they weren't relevant before. And I'm telling you, the people that I'm talking to at Summer League, I'm talking to them about the Jimmy Butler thing. And everybody's like, look, people are going to pay attention. Jimmy Butler is the guy who is friends with everybody. He was connected to Kawhi, to LeBron, to KD, to Kyrie, to Kemba. He was connected to all of the big guys. And now the Heat aren't bringing any of those guys in. But Jimmy Butler has friends everywhere. He's got the inside track to making an All-Star game. We know the kind of recruiting that happens at the All-Star game. Hell, that's where it sounds like KD and Kyrie got the had the idea to play together.
We saw them. We saw them talking yes. in the hallway there.
Yes. That's where it happened. They were like, Brooklyn? They're like, great. It's important. You need to do it now. And you're right. A B-level star doesn't get you over the hump, but it gets you closer to doing that. And that's what Jimmy Butler is going to do for Miami. And the cost that they gave... I mean, we're talking about Josh Richardson, Hassan Whiteside, and a heavily protected first-round pick. That's what it costs to get Jimmy Butler. You do that 10 times out of 10.
Yes. You find a way to make it an 11th, too. I mean, it's absolutely the perfect move for Miami. And I mean, we had often talked about this. Look, I don't think there was anybody more supportive of Josh Richardson recently than I was, to be honest with you.
Yes.
Trying to extol his virtues as a hard worker and potential leader and everything else. I mean, as a player in person, he was fun to cover and fun to talk to and everything else, and fun to watch grow and develop. And I hope he's able to continue developing. But we often talked about who was the player who was going to be recruiting. And it's so valuable in today's league. Like, you need to have a star player. There are plenty of teams out there that do not have that star player and are looking. I mean,
Look no further than the Lakers. Their front office is completely inept. And yet they're going to end up with Anthony Davis and maybe even Kawhi Leonard just because LeBron James is the best recruiter in the league.
That's absolutely fair. I mean, and you need those kinds of star-level players. You need all-stars. The camaraderie is such a big aspect of it. You form friendships. And come on, it's the same rule, and it applies to our lives. It's like you want to work with people that you're comfortable with. You know, you want to work with people that you connect with on a close level. Why wouldn't you want to go and work with them? And if you can find a way to make many millions of dollars in the process, you absolutely do it. And I think Jimmy, for all of his problems... I think a lot of people are starting to nitpick now. Look, whatever happened in Philadelphia, he didn't want to be there. He didn't want to be a backup there. They were throwing a lot of money at Tobias Harris. Who knows what the reasons are for him leaving, you know, Philadelphia. As far as Minnesota and Chicago are concerned, I think there was really a lack of people that complimented him on a personality level. Like, the Chicago roster was a mess. Yeah. The front office was a mess. He didn't want to get paid to stay there and see guys like Bobby Portis or everybody else kind of continue to take steps in development. They weren't willing to do the work that he is. And I think he saw the same thing in Minnesota, too. Right. Like, I remember talking to him a couple years ago before he was traded and questioning Andrew Wiggins' commitment to the work. And we know how he feels about Karl Anthony Towns. And that's a good potential, you know, reason for not signing there and not wanting to stay in that team. And I think he sees Miami. He sees the culture here. He sees the level of work ethic. And he says, you know what? Let's continue this trend and then bring other guys that have something similar in mind.
And people are attacking him because he said, I want to win above all else. And he was like, well, then why did you leave Philadelphia to go to Miami? Maybe he looked around him in Philadelphia and said, you're banking everything on this Ben Simmons guy who won't shoot a three, and Joel Embiid, who I'm not sure is going to play 30 games a season. That's what we're betting on? He's like, yeah, maybe we're a playoff team. Last year was a lot of fun. I don't think – maybe he decided after being there for half a year, I don't think that I can win long term here. Maybe I can go to Miami and really build something the way Dwayne Wade did. One of my best friends in the league. I saw him do it. I could do that. And by the way, one of the underlying stories of this free agency is that the super team is not really a thing anymore. Again, depending, caveat for whatever happens with Kawhi.
Right.
The super team really isn't a thing as much as it was when Golden State and all these other teams started loading up. If you have two guys and good role players, you are now a contender. Yes. Legitimately a contender. The Heat have one of them. They need to go out and get the other one. But now the path to the finals, it is wide open. It becomes a lot easier for the Heat now that Golden State and the Super Team thing is kind of at least taking a break or on hiatus for now. I think the path becomes a lot easier for Miami. And that is a huge reason why you just go get Jimmy Butler now. It gets you a lot closer to where you want to be.
Absolutely.
That's it for today. Connect with us on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes. Wrap it up, D.